part of the reason you failed, hopefully, is that you were taking good risks that just happened to not work out that time. You should be taking good risks, and you shouldn't let the failures from the good risks deter you from taking good risks in the future.
Hey, everyone. So I mentioned it in this episode, and I think in the last episode too, but this is going to be the last episode for a while. I've been making At Least There's This for pretty much every week since September 2017, and I gotta take a break for a few other projects I'm working on. This episode is a fun one to go out on. In it, we touch on a lot of the themes I've touched on throughout all of what I'm now calling Season 1. 5 points for everyone who spots a different theme. Sometime between now and next season, I'll drop a short little retrospective talking about some of the thoughts I've had about this wacky little experiment we've all been a part of. And also, stay tuned, I'll use this channel to talk about another podcast that I'm dropping, hopefully in the next month or so. I love you guys, thanks for being part of this weird experiment with me, and I hope you enjoy the episode.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to At Least There's This, a show about some of the small good things in our world of the Christmas Wars. It started out as a battle, and then it blew into a full-on candy cane murder fest. Guys, we're in the dumbest season. I've always said this. I'm gonna go in. If there's a war on Christmas, I want to be on whichever side is against Christmas, because Christmas fucking blows. Holidays are okay, but when it's forced down your throat constantly that you need to feel something to be a real American and a person, then fucking that sucks. The thing I am most grateful for about being born a Jewish feller is it's not the strong community and the focus on education. It's that I got to know what it's like to not believe in Santa Claus before everyone else didn't believe in Santa Claus, because that set me up to be the person that I am, the person who goes, wait, what if this thing we all think is actually bullshit? Why do we believe this? It's great if you love Christmas, but that does not mean that Christmas is the end-all be-all of human life. You can be unhappy on Christmas. You can be unhappy when you hear Christmas music other than Bublé, because that man is a god. I do not like Christmas. I'm sorry. I'm a fucking Grinch. But in a world where there's this holiday that I guess we all have to fellate to feel like real people, at least there's...
poker, baby!
Woo!
Yeah.
Yes! Guys, I am with
so much poker.
I'm with a podcast icon, a veritable legend of the pod, Mr. Yeah. Andrew T. What's up, Andrew?
What up? How's it going?
Hey, say hi to all my fans.
what do you call your fans?
At least heads? At
Leasters? Leastos.
Leastos.
Yeah, Leastarines.
Leastomania.
Leastomaniacs. Leastomania. What up, y'all? At least there's this podcast at the very goddamn least.
Yeah, at the very least, there's that. We're going to chat about poker. Yeah. Will you intro yourself and what you do, Yo Is This Racist, to the people who might not know you?
Sure, no doubt. My name is Andrew T. I do a podcast that started out as like a blog, an advice blog. The world's easiest advice blog called Yo Is This Racist? Yeah, people write in, they're obviously racist shit, and I'm like, yeah, it's fucking racist, you idiots. It's remarkable how people think their questions are complicated when it's like, no, it's never complicated.
The answer
I guess sometimes it's complicated, but it's really not really ever complicated.
Seeing things that people will write in to you guys or leave voicemails to you guys about, I'm like, I guess it's a context question of, should I confront this person?
Yeah.
Usually, should I confront this person or not?
Yeah. Maybe, you know what? I think the ultimate service we do provide is we give them, like, a thing to do when they have in the past remained silent.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, obviously, grain of salt with all the shit we say, but most of the time it's pretty hard to just be like, yo, fuck you, you're racist.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think we should all try it a little bit more than we do.
There are so many times now, like, in retrospect, I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I should have said that. And then, like, I've been listening to your podcast for a while, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna, next time,
I'm gonna,
and then I get there, and like, that woman's wearing a Native American headdress.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just leaving here.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's also fine. That's also fine. You don't have to be the dude. But it's, and this will get into our topic a little bit. It's one of those things, like, in hindsight, like, the value you derived from not rocking the boat is usually pretty minimal.
Yeah.
And the value you can do, or the good you can do by rocking the boat, on average, it's usually better to do that.
This will get us into what our topic is, but it also gets us into my first question.
Yeah.
Oh, but Yo, Is This Racist is your podcast.
Yes, yes, okay. Yes, please, yeah. listen to Yo, Is This Racist.
On Earwolf, which is the, like, premier podcast network.
That is, that's nice of you to say. I didn't think about the order of podcast networks.
I think about this all too much.
Yeah,
because
I think people
do.
Because
it's my niche thing to be a part of. But
yeah.
I feel like most people who listen to podcasts, most people in comedy who listen to podcasts started with Earwolf.
That's probably true. I will say it is like a thing, though, like all things. I mean, our show is the least Earwolfy of the Earwolf podcasts, probably. You know, it's comedy, but unlike like usually when we have guests, especially if I don't know them very well, we have to tell them, like, it doesn't have to be comedy every second of this. Whereas the order of the day for every other Earwolf podcast literally is, it does have to
just
be comedy.
Goof,
yeah.
Bit.
So I think ours is, we're the like, I mean, sometimes we are just the wet blankets of the network. Because sometimes shit is really depressing.
Yeah. You guys definitely feel more aligned with, like, the How Stuff Works comedy.
Maybe,
division, like, Bechdelcast and Zeitgeist and stuff. Because it's like, we're going to be funny, but man, life blows, huh?
Yeah. And friend, you know, we're all friends. That's why I kind of, it is like a little bit like the way, all the Wu-Tang solo albums were on different labels.
Oh yeah.
There's like a thing that I feel like we have a common cause with, like, a lot of podcasts across network, and sometimes more, not whatever, Earwolf's great, but, like, sometimes, you know, there's just sometimes content-wise more in common with, you know, like your Keep Its and your Bechdel casts.
Yeah.
Than like some, you know, whatever X random improv podcast.
So the takeaway is, fuck you, Scott Aukerman.
Yeah, exactly.
And, Andrew, are you an optimist or a pessimist or neither of those things?
Oh, so, okay. I think that I am a pessimist, but my behavior would indicate I'm an optimist.
That's why I like this question, because they're kind of, optimist and pessimist, I think, are truly meaningless terms.
Yeah.
But it lets you, like, what does it mean to you, and then how do those interplay? Like, what does optimist and pessimist then mean to you?
So, optimist would be tends to view the world and the future in positive terms, or the expecting positive outcomes, and pessimist would be someone who views the world in the future expecting negative outcomes. And thus, that's why I feel like intellectually I'm a pessimist, but, like, the way I act and live my life and play poker, like, seems to belie that I expect things to go better than average for me.
Huh.
Which, you know, just looking at it, I think objectively, I think that's what, that's optimism. I don't know. So I don't know. I don't know if it's like a worldview or a pattern of behavior.
Yeah. How do those things play out in your day to day?
Well, you know, among other things, like trying to be an entertainment, right? So that if you think about it, however pessimistic any of us in entertainment might seem, just the fact that you're doing something that is against the odds and you expect better than an average outcome means you're on some level an optimist.
I guess so. I think there could be an argument against that, but I do follow your reasoning.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, totally.
If you will allow me, and we were just talking before you came in, before we started recording, Andrew and I were talking about how when you've been listening to a podcaster for a while, you can get too familiar with them, even when they don't know who the fuck you are. Mm-hmm. But your job basically is seeing all the awful shit in the world.
Yeah, totally.
And not sort of paving it over with like, they were just joking. You're not the like, yo, was I just joking podcast?
Yeah.
But that is
true.
You see all the ugliness, but like, would you call it? Would you do a podcast about talking about it if you didn't think that that could lead to
some kind
of positive outcome?
Yeah. Well, so I guess that's the thing. Maybe that's the difference between or how people talk about optimism and pessimism. Because I think, like, what we do in Yo, Is This Racist, and what, you know, like the seeing the worst in the analysis. Because the thing with Yo, Is This Racist that is, because I host it with, my co-host is Tawny Newsom. She's black. And, you know, as two people of color, we feel like, on average, why am I picking my words so carefully? Like, our baseline of viewing race stuff is different. And I don't know if I would say more pessimistic, but it's sort of, we notice things that are, you know, have racist antecedents or whatever.
Right.
More lucidly, I feel, than like the average white person, you know, would be my argument.
Yeah.
So, but to me, that's just like seeing things. And I guess when you say optimist or pessimist, there is a... So maybe I see optimism and pessimism as being about the future and not the present.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's it. That's what I'm saying. So, like, you know, we can all analyze the facts of the present.
Yes.
In whatever way we do. But then irrationally expecting it to be better or worse, that's the optimism or pessimism.
Okay.
That, I guess, I'm...
We could easily
clear this up with like 8 minutes on 8 seconds on a dictionary.
But
like,
we could find it with a dictionary. But I feel like at that point they're almost like, especially because everybody defines it differently. Evan, that's the purpose of this show. It's to take something. I mean, you can take something demonstrably good like the sun and talk about that, or you can take something like Maggie Mae Fish came on and talked about video boxes you buy, like old VHSs you buy from Amazon. It's like all these shitty movies. How is this as good as The Sun, Maggie Mae Fish?
Yeah, yeah.
And she did a great job. I think that you also, we can, like, this is fucking fascinating to me.
Because I've never
looked at poker as like almost a form of competitive group psychoanalysis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really honestly, like a very controlled way. I mean, the other thing, you know, because it's been a while. I hurt my knee, but I used to like do combat sports.
Yeah, me too.
And it's the same thing where you're like, you learn about it's almost like counterintuitive. I think those things are better for people who are less naturally aggressive, but when in a combat sport, like especially a striking kind of sport.
Yeah.
You learn a lot about yourself the first time you get hit in the face.
Yeah.
And you're like, did I get mad? Did I lose my head? What did it take for me to not lose my head?
Did I get scared?
Yeah.
Me too.
And I think those things are really, I think poker is a similar, and you know what? And my poker playing has coincided almost exactly with hurting my knee, so.
How long have you been out?
About like 8 months now.
Woof.
Yeah.
Did you like really tweak something?
I've just had bad knees for like forever and ever.
Me too.
And it was one of the things I was like, I'm going to take a while off and just make sure nothing is in there.
Were you doing BJJ?
Yeah.
That's so bad for your knees. I know it's not supposed to be, but I fucked my knee up so bad trying to do BJJ.
I mean, I used to do like all MMA, so that was worse.
Okay.
So to me, jiu-jitsu was like, well, at least I'm not kicking.
Right. I found, whatever. We don't have to talk about that, but I do want to talk about.
Well, but I will say, I do think it's the same thing. Like, it is a controlled place for aggression and fear to happen. And
yes,
I really recommend it for people who are not used to, who don't like aggression and are fearful.
Right. That's I so guess fascinating.
Really,
yeah.
It's a lot less so for people on the other side. People are naturally aggressive.
People, yeah.
Although I guess like something like jiu-jitsu, usually those people learn that their aggression has limits.
Yes, but I feel like you get a it's like being a size bigger if you're hyper aggressive. Like
yeah.
you have to go
yeah.
up against someone who can really just school you to be like,
yeah.
all right,
yeah,
yeah. tone down.
Yeah, or not. A lot, right. of, a lot of people just get thrown out of gyms.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what I like about poker is right. that hyper aggressive people, you know, aggression is very powerful until it's not. And on the poker table,
right.
you know, eventually, I'm at the stage. I'm still pretty new at poker, but I've been playing a lot online, and I'm at the point where I like maniacs now, because I'm like, okay, I'm gonna take all your money.
Okay, so
eventually
you've, like, learned enough that you can to keep using the martial arts metaphors. You can like judo toss them.
Yeah. Well, like, I just wait until they overextend themselves.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well. I'm going to beat you now.
So what have you learned about yourself and aggression? I guess through all stuff, but through poker
yeah.
specifically.
Yeah, so the poker thing, I mean, I think the thing is, it's like, not for everyone, but for my type of personality, you know, I always used to react to someone betting into me with anxiety or fear. It's like, oh, this is, I don't like this. This is, you know,
yeah.
either they're bluffing or they have it, but either way, I don't like being aggressed towards.
Yeah.
And I feel like one thing I've been trying to work on poker especially, is you can make someone else feel that aggression.
Wow.
Easily.
Okay.
You know, whereas in like jiu-jitsu, maybe it will take a little bit of time, you know, especially online, but you know, playing with chips, you just toss the chips right back at them. You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
it's like aggression is as little... It takes very little to do in poker. So that's a thing that, you know, besides steeling yourself to do it.
Right.
And so for me, like, coming to the realization of, like, any pressure or anxiety I feel, you can do that back to somebody.
That's so instantly. Interesting.
Yeah.
For me, especially for me to hear, I don't know if we have similar temperaments, but it sounds like we kind of do in terms of aggression. Like,
a little bit, yeah. Maybe.
I did martial arts my whole life and still did not like... when someone would really press
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
But I was in a wrestling tournament once and I beat a guy handedly because I got suddenly very comfortable with aggression.
Yeah.
And bringing it back. And it was like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Like, and I still, though, am not as a person comfortable. And it sounds like poker's giving you this place to, like...
Yeah. Well, you kind of see... Because, like most things, the best strategy is a little bit of both.
Uh-huh.
And so I think, you know, the martial arts metaphor is good, too, is when you get to a certain level of being comfortable, you learn that actually using your aggression from time to time is actually the safest thing. Because really, you don't want to be aggressive most of the time because it feels dangerous, because
yeah.
you are vulnerable, because you are possibly provoking someone. But a thing that I think, you know, you definitely learn in grappling and to some degree, like, you know, striking type stuff, but also in poker, which is that showing aggression back or being aggressive yourself from time to time actually makes things or can make things more under control.
How
or
so?
Make you safer. Well, you know, so with like a lot of the hyper aggressive people when they play, especially online, where it's just like, who knows, these could be
right.
honestly, some of them could just be bots, whatever. But you know, most of the time they're just fucking maniacs from wherever, and you know, showing a willingness to be a maniac yourself, or you know, to really like. Like I said, like for now, when someone is like going crazy, you know. So in poker, right? Like, and when I play no limit Texas Hold'em, no limit meaning you can bet any amount of money at any given time, as long as you have it in your stack at the table before the hand starts. And you know, so online especially, there are people who will just go all in every hand. So that's betting the entire stack they have in front of them. And the thing is. even when you see someone do it and you know they can't possibly have a good hand every time, it's still very hard for you to steel yourself and be like, okay, well, I'm going to call your bet because you've, you know, shoved all in like four or five times in a row. But then you do it a couple times. You know, you just start to peg the maniac and say, okay, well, I have a, you know, by the evidence, they're being aggressive with anything, whether they're strong or weak in their cards. So basically, anytime you have your own, you know, for yourself, a hand in, you know, the top 50%, top 25% of the cards you could have, you're going to have to just call, you know, and just know that on average, you know, over the long haul, this is the right move because you will beat them if they're exhibiting such crazy aggression. Or sometimes I will just start, you know, maybe not shoving because I don't, you know, there's usually it's not just two people at a table. So you don't want to make yourself vulnerable to smart play from the other non-maniacs at the table. But I'll just start being more aggressive myself or like, you know, calling things I maybe wouldn't do. But, you know, and then the other thing is, for me, just like leading out, this probably could have been the beginning of it. Just leading the bet is not something I would do a lot. And there's this concept in poker called fold equity, which is basically, so you have your hand, and in Texas Hold'em, you know, if you've ever watched it on TV, there's those little percentages and next to it, typically when you can see everyone's hole cards. And you can sort of loosely, even when you can't see the other person's hand, obviously, you can loosely estimate how much equity you have in this pot. So you know that there are two more cards out, and either you think you have the best hand now, or that you have, you're close to drawing to a good hand. And so with X cards left, you can assign a percentage to it. But this concept of fold equity is this idea of, the other way you can win a hand, of course, is if you bet and the other person folds.
Yeah.
So it's not just what is the value of your hands. You have to add some, possibly small sometimes, and very hard to calculate sort of regardless, amount of value just being aggressive has.
Right.
Which is what fold equity is. Right?
That's fascinating. Are you finding that you are now able to use aggression as a scalpel-like tool more in your actual life, in your day-to-day, outside of games of chance or combat sports?
I cannot think of an example.
Okay.
I would chalk it up to sort of like that sort of muscle memory of less, you know, ultimately it's more just confidence and modulating. I mean, I still don't have the type of personality where it can be aggression all the time. Like, that doesn't work for me. I start second-guessing myself too often. But I think, I think, like, it just generally reinforces on a subconscious level that that should be another tool in your toolbox.
Yeah.
Being aggressive, taking the initiative. I think poker maybe is a place where, like, you know, like initiative outside of like a role playing game is very hard to even write in, like role playing games are modeled off of fighting, when so is combat, you know, a combat sport. And sometimes you know, when you're, it's probably the most obvious is like boxing,
right?
Like, it's clear who has the initiative because you can tell who did something first. Whereas sometimes in grappling, it's a little hard to tell, or like something may have been seemingly aggressive or seemingly defensive or whatever, you know, I'm not at the level of grappling where I'm like clear, like, okay, who's the person that's in charge that's leading the thing always.
Unless sometimes it's just so clear.
Yeah, unless it's very clear, like someone is attacking, someone is defending, of course. But like in boxing, it's super clear.
Yeah.
It's like you stuck your fist out, you're the one that started it. But in poker, it's super, super, super clear. You know, like even in boxing, right, you could kind of lead with your face and faint and draw people in, blah, 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 all that shit. And I guess there is some level of that in poker. You can check or bet very small to feign weakness to try to draw an overwhelming response that may not actually be in the other person's favor. But by and large, it's pretty fucking clear. Like, you're the one that put money in.
Right. So it seems, how long did you do combat sports for before poker?
Well, again, with like 5-6 years, okay, maybe a little longer than that.
So in adulthood, you didn't do it.
Oh yeah, only in adulthood. Only adulthood. Yes,
okay,
yes,
so
yes.
I'm trying to sort of get a sense of like how long you've been playing with these aggressive things.
Oh yeah, about that time.
So about 6 years.
Yeah.
Is there before you started doing this? Could you tell, like, I need some outlet for aggression or some, not even outlet, because that sounds like you needed an aggressive catharsis and you're bottling it up, but like, I need a way to try this, play with this, experiment.
No.
Okay.
I very much, and this is like where sort of optimism becomes arrogance, whatever.
Yeah.
I've always been the sort of person who thought, this is so funny, because I have basically every time I write something, I describe a character as having these traits.
Okay.
But I'm the guy that thinks he's can outsmart everyone, but that manifests itself in being kind of like a yes man.
Huh.
You know what I mean?
I guess. Can you give me an example?
Sure. I will. I can do it from this very business. you know what? Maybe not a yes man, but kind of like a yeah man. No.
Like a Rastafarian man. Character?
Yeah, like a
Yaman?
No. And I'll put it like this. So I did a TV pilot for Yo, Is This Racist? That was the first like thing I'd, you know, done really on my own. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I was given way too much responsibility. but basically, every time I got a note from the network, I would say yes, even if I hated it or thought it was idiotic or whatever, or wrong. Not idiotic, they're fine. Everyone's trying hard. But, like, you know, I thought it was wrong. But I am the type of person that, or I am, and hopefully I'm less now, but I definitely was the type of person that avoids confrontation as much as possible, in with the idea that I can simply take this thing, think my way through it to something, I can outsmart them.
Right. You and I know you will, having listened to you talk about martial arts for a long time, might take umbrage for this metaphor, but you're like trying to use mental Tai Chi to get yourself through.
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, I guess that's true. It's the way those, like, we'll just call them, this is going to become the Joe Rogan podcast for a brief second. Well, it's like the way those fake martial arts pretend that works. You know, like the way Aikido works in a movie.
And the way Aikido works just when Steven Seagal does it.
Yeah, exactly. But that is what, and maybe that's actually a pretty good metaphor for how effective it is in real life. But
yes, I've done a good job.
Yeah, so I used to go to a school that taught, like, the first place I did jiu-jitsu also taught Jeet Kune Do.
Uh-huh.
And it's a great gym, and it's really cool, and I really like it a lot. But some of the Jeet Kune Do stuff, Jeet Kune Do is the martial art created by Bruce Lee, I believe.
He made it, but wanted people not to do it. Was like, sort of, but maybe he didn't, and that was just like a sales tactic.
Yeah. But it is, you know, it's sort of like billed as street fighting and all this stuff. Basically, there was always the guys from the Jeet Kune Do class that would come to jiu-jitsu, you know, and be getting schooled because they're not, you know, they're not really doing real stuff.
Right.
And then they would be like, well, in real life, I would just hit you in the balls or whatever, you know, or gouge your eyes out, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I mean, maybe. But you aren't actually practicing gouging eyes.
Right.
And, you know, you could never have a school where everyone is actually practicing gouging eyes and kicking nuts and breaking fingers.
Because you have a school of no eyes and no nuts
and
no fingers.
Yeah, and that's very hard to train a second time.
Right.
But whereas I'm getting pretty good at, you know, controlling where your body is on the ground, or when I'm boxing, I'm getting pretty good at aiming my fist at a target.
Right.
And I still think, even though I haven't specifically practiced eyeball gouging, that since I've put in so many reps of trying to touch someone's face with the flat of my fist, whereas you've been sort of doing drills that pretend to gouge eyeballs, I still think I could gouge your eyeball faster than you could gouge mine.
It's also really hard to gouge somebody's eyes.
It's crazy town.
Like, yeah, the human body is good at not letting its eyes get taken out.
It's unbelievable that. The other part of that, though, is that those combat sports guys say shit like that so casually. And I'm like, my man, you can't. You would cry so hard, as would we all.
If you gouged somebody's eyes out.
Yeah.
You would vomit.
Yeah.
I grew up in McDojo Kung Fu.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I have so much rage against it, against like a bunch of white guys who can't pronounce Chinese teaching me
Kung Fu,
like Shaolin Kung Fu. I'm using heavy air quotes that it's just like boils my blood.
Honestly, so the Chinese folks too, you're like, it's fine, but it's a stage combat thing that is not, look, unless you believe in magic, there's a reason people aren't like, doing a bunch of spin kicks and shit in the UFC.
I
mean, and they do still, and it's always a bad idea.
A million pages have been written on the internet about this.
Yeah.
The first internet fight I ever got in was with Kung Fu, like a real Kung Fu master, and I did Swai Jiao, like Chinese wrestling, for 2 years. And you're wrestling. There's no there's no, like, you're throwing a man's body with your body.
Yeah.
China and Mongolia shared a border, right? It's not like it's.
You're
hurting people.
Yeah.
But it's still part of that world. And I came up through Chinese martial arts. I love doing internal martial arts like Tai Chi because it makes you breathe good and your feet feel nice.
Your balance is probably good. But
and it just feels good for your hips.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Sometimes you get so much like, right?
Yeah,
like
people need it to be magic.
Yeah.
Yes. I just realized. So I was playing poker yesterday with someone who is, let's just say charitably, although she won, so what do I know? But we'll say charitably very bad at math and probability.
Uh-huh.
There is a little bit of that with gambling, with poker especially. It's like people, enough of the people who play it believe in magic.
Like hot hand fallacy and
that
sort of shit.
That sort of shit.
You've always struck me whenever I've heard you on podcasts as like a very skeptically minded, like scientifically skeptically minded person, which I am as well. So it's like, oh, you know, I see it. Right, like hearing you talk about like conspiracies and shit, it's like, oh, he's not just saying it's dumb. Like that's the logical reason why that conspiracy is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that is a thing you see in martial arts and in poker and for anything. It's like,
of course.
Right.
Well, you know, it's because we don't have, you know, there isn't an infinite timeline.
Mm-mm.
And there are not enough to justify the amount of how bad people are at math. But there's enough like unexplained things or like, you know, we are bad enough at perceiving chance.
Yeah.
That. Sure, a lot of shit seems like magic. Or, like, oh, we're very bad at assigning cause and effect.
Right. There's actually a really good... I know we are one type of person. There are plenty of people who... That's their worldview. And I love... Some of my best friends are, and I still love them.
Yeah, of course.
Dearly, if you like sort of what we're talking about, I recommend this great book called Drunkard's Walk by Leonard Maltenow. Do you ever read anything by Maltenow?
Oh, I haven't. Is he a mathematician?
He is a physicist, but he deals a lot with like math.
I think I've certainly read been assigned, but probably just skimmed a paper called that.
Drunkard's Walk?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you study math and stuff in college?
I studied a little bit of computer science.
Okay.
And that would be where that came
probably
from.
It's just about randomness and probability. He takes you through the history.
Oh, and I took
statistics.
A number theory class in high school.
Cool.
That maybe did that. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Sweet.
People are bad at statistics, like it, or not even just that. It's just like, you know. So a lot of the thing that happened yesterday when I was playing poker, which is also why my voice is a bit gravelly. I stayed out too late. Is you know, so in poker, in Texas Hold'em poker, everyone gets two cards in their hand face down, and then there's three community cards that are dealt after the first round of betting called the flop, and then one more called the turn, and then one more called the river. So ultimately, at the end, there's five cards on the table. And between the five cards on the table that everyone can use and the two cards in your hand, you're supposed to make the best five-card poker hand. But the most kind of action, the biggest change is when the first three cards come out, because that's three of the five. So that basically tells you where you're going to be at, and we call that the board, the cards that are out on the community table. And a lot of times, so this happened many times, and it happens a lot, is, and it even happens with people who are good, So it's not purely just like a beginnerish or amateurish sort of thing. Not that I'm anything but an amateur, but like extra amateur. Wherein the board will come out some garbage, right? Uh-huh. You know, 2, 2, 5, 9 of no connected suits, all different suits. And then, you know, someone will be like, ah, I folded 5-8. You know, I would have had 2 pair if I just stayed in before the flop came out. But there was a round of betting before the flop. And I just got to the point yesterday where I was like, well, that's why you never fold 5-8. You know, which is like obviously insane. But how are you supposed to respond to like, oh, I would have won that hand, you know, had I done the a very bad thing.
Had I known the future,
I would have
been great.
With my garbage.
I felt the same way playing poker, and it's like, I suppose that's the human thing of trying to learn a pattern to not do it. But like, at a certain point, there is no pattern.
Yeah.
It's
or just tell you, or like, though we all have that instinct, right? It's like, oh, maybe I should have stayed in. But it's like, then just go back and talk to yourself of like, well, what does that mean?
Yes.
Does that mean I always play 5-8? Does that mean I think 5-8 is a good hand now?
Yeah.
What is, like, do I play 4-6? 4-7? What then, if I think 5-8 is a good hand, what's a bad hand?
Do you play every hand?
Yeah.
Because you can never know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a thing. And then it's like, well, if I start playing every hand, does that make sense? You know,
yeah.
Hopefully the answer you'll find to those questions is no, because that's...
Now we're talking about you being analytical again, which you are clearly an extremely analytical person.
Yeah, I guess so.
Which is good. I don't know why that's a problem. I think being analytical gets a shitty rap.
Yeah.
Especially in Los Angeles, which is a very, like,
intuitive. Yeah, yeah,
you know,
of course.
And
yeah.
That some intuition is good, but I think it sort of lives in L.A., it lives in this world where, like, intuition is only good.
Yeah.
And analysis rules the world, which no, it does not.
Yeah.
Look at our fucking president.
Yeah.
And like, we all need to be more intuitive.
Yeah.
Analysis is great. More people should be analytical too.
I will say this though. Yeah. And I think like what the other part of the LA thing, composite is, intuition, however you define it.
Right.
Paired with aggression and confidence. Is the thing.
That is true. There are some of the most aggressive hippies I've ever met out here.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not simply like going with the flow. It's deciding however you decided you interpret the flow, deciding that's correct.
Yes.
And so I would a little bit argue that maybe that's the recipe for success. I mean, because you look at, like, say, your typical New York person, if you think of the world of finance, that's like analytical compared merged with confidence and aggression.
Right.
So I do think a little bit, if you kind of solve for why, like the thing that's left over in both cases is the confidence and aggression more than the how you came to your conclusions, which then leads me to believe maybe a little bit doesn't matter what the conclusions are.
So we're looking at sort of like an XY, but like a full XY chart of on your left and your right, you've got analytical and you've got intuitive, and then on your north and south you've got your passive and your aggressive.
And the success quadrants I would say are at the top
regardless.
So really those two axes are the intuitive versus analytical is how you come to your worldview.
Yes.
And then the other axis, passive or aggressive, not, you know, whatever, or aggressive and we'll say passive and aggressive, is what you do with those conclusions.
Yeah.
And I think maybe you're right. It's like there's so many ways to just be confident.
Yes.
With whatever bullshit. Because the other wrinkle to that is like, you know, like finance and tech and, you know, our very own president. Like, you can also think you're analytical and be wildly incorrect.
Yes, be super intuitive. Like, even this in the book I just recommended, Drunkard's Walk, like, he talks about how, like, no, the stock market is like 100% bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, no one can predict that shit. It's just, we just look at the winners and we have a, which cognitive fallacy am I thinking of?
Like a post facto.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And
the way I phrase it is like everyone's grandpa survived the landing at Normandy Beach.
Right, because if they didn't, you wouldn't be here.
They're not, they fathered any kids. You're so, that's the thing. It's like by the lot. And that actually is like,
the opposite of the anthropic principle.
What's that one?
The anthropic is like, well, the world must have been made for us because look where the world is.
Yeah, yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Well, no, we exist. We're only here because the world lucked
it. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, it's that kind of logic where it's like, yeah, of course, you know, it's the history is written by the winners sort of thing. It's like, yeah, because they're fucking still alive.
They're the only ones still left. But so we're okay. Aggression.
Yeah,
we're talking about it. I'm loving these blind alleys. I could walk down. I could walk down logically fallacious blind alleys with you all day, Andrew.
Yeah, that's good.
Have you? So you brought more aggression into your life through confidence. Now you're saying, is that something you're trying to do or you have done?
That's a good question. I don't. I would say I imagine I've done it because I'm not consciously trying to do it that I'm aware of.
But you've seen sort of...
I feel like things are, you know, even just like in my poker play, which is the thing that I've been using as sort of my gauge for that. It's that in general, you know, and things have swung kind of maybe, at least in the poker, a little too much. I feel I'm probably a little too bluffy now.
Yeah.
Maybe not, though. Well, I don't know.
Well, okay. Find me on the tables.
In my life, I would say, you know, I guess, you know, I've started doing more performing and stuff. And I think that has all been like, you know, maybe it's a bit chicken and the egg. Obviously, the podcast, we've been doing live shows. I've been doing a little stand up. Mm-hmm. Like, so those things have been sort of additive and maybe they all kind of become a confidence thing. Maybe I'm just like getting old and I don't give a fuck about failure anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's maybe the other part of poker. The flip side to that is, it's a very controlled way to fail. So you can only lose the money you have on the table in front of you.
Yeah.
You know. So, sometimes you have to go all in, even when you don't have the best possible hand. Because you think you have essentially a greater than 50% chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
I've become more on the poker table and I think in life like aggressive in marginal spots. Because that's the other thing, right? It's even very passive people. When you have the absolute in poker, it's called the nuts, the best possible hand you could have. But you know, in life that can happen too. You just know you hold all the cards, as they say.
Yeah.
Or you are winning this exchange. You have all the leverage, blah, blah, blah. Everyone's aggressive then. It's easy to be aggressive then. There's a little bit more, though, of like being aggressive when you're a 60-40, you know, favorite. Or knowing that when you're only a 40-60 underdog, that your 40 makes their 60 a little bit vulnerable because they're not at 80% win, 90% win, which is where we all like to be. So I think those things, it's like a poker term, I believe it's called thin value. So like if you're only winning by, if you're only up by a couple percentage points, that's where the real profit at the poker table is made, is like making sure you get value when you're 55 to 45. Because it's easy to get value when you're 90-10.
Yeah.
And that's not where the actual like profit is made. It's when you're 60-40, 65-35 even, that you're like, yeah, I could easily lose.
Right.
You know, there's still a 30% chance I could lose. I lose 1 in 3 times, but I win 2 in 3 times. And if we do this infinite times or even 100 times, I'm coming out way ahead.
Right.
So you have to steel yourself and just be like, I have to make the 60% call, or I have to make the 60% bet, or because I have 40%, I should make a more aggressive action because I don't want, you know, I'd rather have a fold than like play out my 40% equity.
It's literally taking chances and being comfortable with, because I think that with passivity, you aren't comfortable unless you have a high percentage chance of winning.
Yeah.
And then you win less because it's that...
On the balance.
Right, on the balance, right? You're taking less shots.
Yeah.
And sometimes you will make shots that you don't miss, right? Sometimes if you go in with confidence into a fight, you might still get a good punch in or, you know, get
anything
good leverage.
Could happen.
Right, anything could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe the basketball metaphor is good too, right? If you only took high percentage shots, you would lose as a basketball team. Like if you only take, you know, layups and slam dunks, you're going to lose. Or wide open, you know, shots from the floor that you can't win enough or you can't score enough than someone who is taking lower percentage shots, you know, risking blocks, missed shots, whatever. But they will, you know, maybe in football, it's the same thing, right? Not enough people go for it on fourth down, statistically.
Yeah.
So they say, because there's like a fear of failure. You take the high percentage shot, which is a punt. But like the lower percentage shot, which has a much higher reward.
Right.
People are very rarely do it.
Okay, I'm starting to see a real interesting dynamic here. And this, I might be projecting myself, and this is also a bullshit thing that I do, where it's like I kind of create maybe a narrative or armchair psychologize a thing where it's like, I don't have a degree in that.
Sure, I probably shouldn't do that.
It seems like me, again, projecting, some of what you've told me is you're an analytical and cautious person. And so you want to, like, I don't think I'm going to win that, so I'm not going to play that.
Yeah.
So, like, learning in fight sports and in poker, you have to be aggressive.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but you have to be willing to take a chance on a thing that you will lose, which feels intuitive. It feels like, I got to just do it.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that I've noticed in my intuitive friends. That's why I consider myself hippie adjacent, because I'd rather hang out with hippies than with people like me anytime.
Yeah, yeah.
Is they're willing to just like, let's just fucking try it.
Yeah.
We might fail, but this could be great.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's accepting failure a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And aggression is a part of that, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like, oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
It can be like, let's fucking go, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, combat sports is probably a good... I mean, boxing would be probably the most direct thing, which is that every time you extend your arm, you leave at least one sector of your body vulnerable, if not more. So aggression in boxing is immediately and in real time accompanied by vulnerability.
Right.
Not, you know, and again, then you try to mitigate it. But that's what you what I'm trying to get better at is like accepting the vulnerability that comes with aggression. And that's the same thing with poker, right?
Yeah.
Every time you throw money out, you are in danger of losing it.
Yeah.
But that is also the only cudgel you have to make other people lose money.
That is those are so good. Those are two great metaphors. Because you have to attack with the thing that makes you vulnerable.
Yeah.
You got to attack with your heart.
Exactly.
Yeah. I had my good buddy on a little while ago, Jordan Pridgen, who he plays role-playing games professionally, basically, on Twitch and stuff. And one of the things, so he wanted to talk about RPGs, tabletop RPGs, about like why they're so good, and that it lets you do things you don't do as a practice. And it sounds like poker is a fantastic proving ground for you, like, even a little less than, because even with a combat sport, like, people still bring their outside self in, and like, if you get hit in the face, it's gonna hurt for days. And,
yeah,
you know, you can still get seriously messed up, but like, poker, if you're not playing with thousands of dollars, you can, like, it's a little safer.
Always play with money you can lose, by the way.
Yeah.
Only play with money you can lose.
Right.
Well, the other thing with combat sports is that, although this also happens in poker, but it's more readily, is combat sports, especially striking ones, but also in grappling, is that you can lose your head and you revert purely to the person you really are.
Yeah.
You know, in poker, that's called being on tilt. When you lose often, you know, or when you're losing a lot or you're frustrated, you can start to make bad decisions or often more aggressive, often looser decisions.
Right.
And that's called being on tilt. But, you know, in jiu-jitsu, just losing your head or just being pissed or just needing to calm down.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing I like that I got more out of combat sports is somewhat of the ability to calm myself down more quickly, or to like at least sit in what's essentially fear. And I'm getting better at that at poker. And I guess that is what, like, you know, I'm at that part of stand-up where I probably should be more afraid, but I'm just like, oh, who cares? Like, I can just sit here and it's fine.
Well, that's...
Part of it is I have some reps off stage where I'm like, okay, I know some stuff I say is funny enough so that I'm not like, I don't feel like I'm just like loose out there. But yeah, like all things. I mean, I would say, yeah, probably like getting really tooled up in Brazilian jiu-jitsu is the most kind of long periods of fear you can you can sit in. But poker, yeah, that's the other thing. The poker hands are short, right? You can be real afraid. For a second, heart racing, everything, definitely like a fear type response. But it's, even if you lose all your, you know, you just lose all your money.
Yeah. And then
that's it. And again, you only sat down with money you could afford to lose.
Yeah.
But that's it. And then you just rebuy and go again or walk away and, you know, deal with it. Damn. But like, like, so that's a, that's the thing I think that like I like about poker too. And I know I said it like a couple minutes ago, but it's like, The failure is very controlled.
Yeah.
And you can kind of just like, you lose, you lost your whole stack. Just come right back, reach in your pocket, and let's try again.
Controlled failure is...
Yeah.
Because a lot of, I know for a lot of my life, failure was very uncontrolled.
Yeah.
And horrifying.
Yeah.
And so having found places where I can get used to failure makes you... You can bring it back. You could like, okay, well, if I fail at this thing, I know I've been okay when I failed before, so I'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah, you can just try again.
Right.
And you should try again, because part of the reason you failed, hopefully, is that you were taking good risks that just happened to not work out that time.
Yeah.
That's, like, important. Like, yeah, you should be taking good risks. And you shouldn't let the failures from the good risks deter you from taking good risks in the future.
Right.
So that's what I'm trying to be at.
I think we're at a place now where we can try to answer the big and little
G. Yeah,
let's do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So little G, right? Small G, fun for you. This makes your life better.
Yeah.
What is that?
Like, what's good about...
Like,
the...
how is poker that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the just another way... to help mitigate my fear, right?
Nice.
And
okay.
like deal with like, or just see how confidence works. Actually, before we get into that, the other thing with poker is that because you can also sit down and decide you have a different personality in a very controlled sense. Mm. You can just say today's maniac day. So you can experiment with that. So that's the other part of it for me that I really like.
I want to get a loop of you saying today's maniac day.
Yeah.
Just set it to EDM drum beats.
Yeah.
So, okay. Little G is it lets you experiment, I guess, with fear, but also with other personality types.
Yeah.
And what would maybe the global good, and it doesn't just have to be poker itself, but things like poker.
Yeah, I would have to say almost, like, given the facts of the way the world works, the actual poker thing, very bad. The people who are the poker community are, by and large, like, some of the worst people around.
Sorry, poker community, but you heard it here first.
Yeah. See, I mean, it's just like, it attracts a lot of scumbags because aggression is rewarded. So
and false confidence.
Yeah, exactly. Although I think the new wave of more mathy type people are doing a good job of undermining this, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a bunch of, like, you know, more probability, computer science-based people around who are really just cutting the fucking legs out from under the you know, Dan Bilzerian bravado types.
That's how we save the world, guys.
Yeah, it's which is, math. Yeah, it's like, you know, there's a bunch of fucking nerds from Germany that look like, I mean, they are millionaires, so they dress like EDM DJs, but they're still nerds.
Like EDM DJs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in real life. But they are, you know, they do sort of provide a model of, like, you know, analysis and being rational can overcome being a fucking asshole.
That's
maybe
something I think the world ought to live by.
Yeah.
Hopefully in my book.
But yeah, so maybe, but the larger idea of, like, games, and especially people who aren't naturally aggressive gravitating towards things like that to experiment with aggression. The way, and, you know, again, I think it goes back to me. It's like, man, I hate it when people are aggressive towards me. It's so fearful. I you know, I don't like this confrontation. You can instill that in other people.
Yeah.
You don't realize it.
Right.
You can be confrontational back.
That takes me to one, like, last question before we get to plugs and wrap up and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you are sitting down to a poker table, right? I want you to go there in your head.
Yeah,
play
yeah.
in my space.
Yeah.
Right? You're sitting down to a poker table. You haven't even gotten the cards yet. You don't really know anyone else there that well.
Yeah.
What does that feel like?
It's I feel like I've turned a corner in that it doesn't feel scary anymore.
Yeah.
Because I don't, first of all, I don't feel like I totally don't know what I'm doing, so I don't feel a need to like I don't feel like I'm threatened by like, or people are gonna think I'm an idiot.
Right.
And also I have just like a pretty, it's like a very controlled way. Like you get your two cards and you can know how good that hand is, and you can see other people's behavior, and maybe if they're very aggressive, like, you know, you fold a couple things to them that you shouldn't. But then you start to think of it as a pattern rather than as a confrontation. So yeah, poker I think helps you see things as a infinite war, not a individual battle.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, ideally if you're playing at a place that isn't going too slowly with a good dealer, like you are having skirmishes constantly and a lot of reps. And so who cares? You lose a little bit of money at first, maybe, or like you get you know, suckered into folding something you shouldn't have. There's going to be an infinite number of hands in front of you.
How does that feel, though?
Yeah.
Your body.
So
what do you
it
feel
no
like?
Longer feels scary.
Okay.
So it feels like I have a plan.
Okay.
And part of my plan is observing what these strangers do.
Yeah.
So the beginning of it is really just gathering as much information as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it can be scary. And I think
it's
like, you know, the thing that is I've derived is like, it doesn't have to be scary. If nothing else, just fold and take the free drinks.
Nice.
I mean, don't take too many of them, because then you'll get drunk.
Then you'll play a horrible game of poker.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to touch on before we bring the horses home?
Thank you for letting me indulge in this poker talk.
Thank you for indulging.
Most
yeah.
people, when I talk about this shit, it's like the most terrible conversation. I basically have one friend who also plays poker and doesn't mind it, and everyone else really needs me to shut up.
That's the weird thing I found about like podcasts like this is like I love hearing people talk about the things that excite them. I don't want to be the person talking to them.
Yeah.
Like my best friend who's done this podcast, he talked about strangers. He loves talking to strangers.
Uh-huh.
Fucking hate it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But if like I'm hanging out with him, I'm a little stoned, he meets like a stranger who's like, "Oh, I'm this guy and I have this whole life story." I don't want to talk to that guy at all.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I want to hear my friend like talk to that guy.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just sit back and be like, "Cool life story."
Be in their element. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you don't have to be that person.
Right.
Yeah.
It's nice. I love listening to podcasts like this where I'm like, what an interesting guy. Especially people, like I pretty much mostly interview podcasters at this point.
Sure.
And it's nice to like, I've been listening to Jack O'Brien since I was 22. What's his deal? Like, I want to know more about him, you know?
Yeah.
And
I
find it's a cool opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
Let's do some plugs.
Yeah.
But before, I want to, it's a thing I've been springing on people. Is there a thing you'd like to plug that has nothing to do with you that you think just people ought to know about and see or consume in some way?
Oh, shit. I mean, I guess the on theme one is I really like this poker podcast called The Poker Guys. I think they're really
sick.
They're my type of thinker and talker, and I think for poker people, they're relatively funny and they're not psychos. So I guess the Poker Guys podcast, if you enjoyed the way I talk about poker, but you want to hear people who are actually good at poker talk about it, do that. Do I have any other plugs? I don't know.
I mean, plug Yo Is This Racist, because we just talked about it up top.
Yeah, Yo Is This Racist. I think we've been... really hit our stride, been really funny despite how bleak shit is lately. If you're in San Francisco. We'll be at San Francisco Sketch Fest. We're working on a show near there. I'm pretty sure we're not supposed to say yet because we haven't signed any paperwork.
Sweet. Where can people find you on the internet, too?
Andrew T. Last name is spelled T-I. It is all caps. I know it doesn't matter, but technically, but you should do all caps. Yeah. Oh, dogs. Everyone go pet a dog if you're not allergic. That's my plug.
That's a good plug.
Yeah.
I give credence to that plug.
Yeah. I almost set my dog on fire yesterday. So the poker game I was
what
at.
What the fuck?
Well, so it was
what? This changed dramatically.
I know, it was bad. So the poker game I was at yesterday, we also was at my friend's house and we lit a menorah. And I held
my dog up
to take a look at it. And he's like real fuzzy. And we got just too close enough that I was like, oh, wait, no. It was real, real bad. I imagine he probably wouldn't have caught on fire. But, you know, you kind of, you hold him up a little close and then he gets even closer to it and you're like, nope.
For me, my name is Alex Schiffman. This is At Least There's This, a podcast about some of the small good things in our no good, very bad, down home, lonesome world. What is up for me, a thing that has nothing to do with me, please check out the book that I mentioned, Drunkard's Walk. It's very good. And even if you're not really about probability, it's just cool to see how that shit works.
Yeah, and necessary for 99% of you people.
Everything in the world has something that you can.
Yeah.
The world is still beautiful and full of love and emotional magic, even if you know probability.
Yeah,
it's cool shit. And what else? For me, pretty soon, I'm not going to say when or exactly what it's called, but I'm working on a new podcast. So I produce monthly a show called Science with my friend Dylan Farr, who's a stand-up comedian, and my friend Russell Cohen-Hoffing, who's a cognitive scientist. He's got doctor in front of his name. It's very cool. And we're turning that into a podcast. I will tell you guys more as it comes out. Just be aware. And what else? Finally, if you guys liked this podcast, please share it with a friend. If you hated it, please share it with an enemy. Everything goes a long, long way. And if you are sitting down and you're about to play a game of the old hold'em, as I like to call it, hold'em up, and people are dealing real slow, and maybe a cowboy wanders in, he's got a gun on his hip, and you know he's up to no good because the hat covers one eye. So while you're waiting, pull out ye old Western phone, and find At Least There's This on whatever podcast app you prefer, although what I'm about to ask you to do might only work for iTunes. Go there, give me 5 stars, and then buckle up, buddy, because it's about to get pokerific.
Yeah.
Have a great day. Bye.
Today's Maniac Day. Today's Maniac Day. Today's Maniac Day.